Welcome to your. Sorry. Take two and action. Welcome to the Rugby Bits podcast, and I see four South African wins that happened in week 12 of the URC. So we have a lot to celebrate and a lot to talk about this weekend. Sean actually went to the Stormers game, so we can see his insight there. I was actually impressed by the Sharks for once, and the Lions probably had their best win of the season. So a lot to talk about, some first phase. Unfortunately, no Chasing the Sun, because I'm only going to watch it at the end once all the episodes are out. But Sean, you are now craving that second episode, aren't you?
Ah, my man. Yeah, it's... So when I asked you off air, have you watched? And you're like, no, you really want to watch all of them at once. That is literally how I felt on Tuesday. I was like, I actually don't know how I'm going to get through the next 6 days. I've watched it three times. So another two times since watching it live. it's... Yeah, you're just watching it and picking up. It's just incredible. I'm looking forward to what's coming in the next sort of four episodes, because I think there's five in total, but we're in for another cracker, and there will absolutely be tears, because there were almost tears on Sunday, but there will definitely be tears moving forward.
No, we know. I think we know by now what we can expect from that series. So, yeah, have your tissues at the ready. Sean, let's go straight into our first phase, and it's a really good first phase that you were asked. There was name a retired player that a team has never been able to replace. Yeah, and the first one that was mentioned on the Rugby Bits account was Scott Fardy and the Wallabies. I'd even go back and say, I mean, Scott Fardy was very good as well. Rocky Alston was really good, but they still haven't even replaced Owen Finnegan properly as well. So. Yeah, Wallabies and their blindside flanks, they've sort of been a bit on and off with them. They just haven't really had like a real world-class blindside flank, you know, in a long time, at least in my opinion. I mean, Fardy was very, very good. I think he was better for Leinster than he was for the Wallabies, probably. But, sorry, not Leinster. He played for Connacht, right?
No, Leinster.
Oh, I was right. Okay. But, yeah. I think that's just been a problem area for the Wallabies. And it's not like something that they have really, like even the young players that are coming in, you're not quite convinced that they can fill those shoes.
Yeah, it's just reading the responses, and it was the Dirt Trackers came in hard. It was beautiful. We've got like thousands. But it's amazing when you sit back and you think about it and you have a, you have a look at teams and kind of where they're struggling, and then you think back to where they're struggling there the whole time. And it's amazing, but it's also great. Like the nice thing is I was seeing a chat on Twitter today. People were talking about the South African locks, and someone replied with a list of the current locks and the locks coming. That's excluding anyone that's in varsity at the moment. And I never considered it, but we're looking okay. So, it's always nice when we've got a conveyor belt coming through, as we do in South Africa. But yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, look, I think the opposite question is what positions will a national team never run out of? And yeah. Locks and flanks for South Africa, wings in New Zealand, loose forwards in Wales. Like, yeah, those are pretty much, the cupboard is always full for those type of positions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Scrum halves in France.
Scrum halves stroke tens in France. I get like a billion in there.
So going through a few of the responses, I think Jerome Kano was quite popular. Francisco Isaac mentioned him, a few others as well. I think it's funny enough, the person that seemed like was starting to replace him has now moved to Japan, as Shannon Frizzell just started realizing his potential. But yeah, like New Zealand has had a big issue with blindside flank since he left.
Yeah, I think the Kiwis, I think obviously with the form the Kiwis have had over the last 3 or 4 years, it was easy pickings. not a dig at them, but just more like you're highlighting places that you just saw were just naturally looked after. So another one for New Zealand would definitely, in my mind, is Ma Nonu. I think something like that. So they did well with at 12, oh, for the life of me, I can't remember him. He played for the Crusaders 12 and All Black for a while.
Ryan Crotty.
I'm such a massive fan. And it actually reminds me of what AP said. AP said, like, every midfield has to have one boring guy. And like Crotty was that guy, just did his job and was excellent and allowed everyone outside to do their thing. So, yeah, I think the All Blacks were relatively easy. But for me, in the All Blacks setup, I think I agree with Kano, but I think Ma Nonu is probably the biggest. I think they lost at 12. They haven't been managed to replace it yet. It's in the process of being fixed, but it's taken a long time.
Yeah, just, I mean, there's a lot of responses. Thanks to all the dirt trackers for their responses. Too many to go through throughout this podcast. But yeah, just seeing some of the common names, a little bit of Israel Folau. It's funny because I think, again, the replacement might be there in Mark Naokanetawase, but he's also about to leave the sport, at least for a little bit. There's some Pat Lambie for the Sharks. Yeah,
that's a great
There's still some... Yeah, some trauma counseling that has to happen with Sharks fans at the moment.
Pat Lambie for Racing 92 as well. I know him and Dan Carter were there at the same time, and I know that I've banged this drum a lot, but there was a stage when Pat Lambie was their first choice 10 and Dan Carter would have to either sit on the bench or take a break. He was incredible, and they looked great in that season. I think they haven't really managed to get that going. Well, now they've signed Farrell. So as you mentioned, they've the last 3-4 years, they've been a little bit dry at the 10 channel.
Yeah, look, I mean, you go from someone like Carter, even Lambie, and people that can win trophies, and then you have that Scottish 10 for a little bit, doesn't win trophies. And now you have a trophy win again. So good replacement there for Racing. Some other names that have come up, Conrad Smith, I mean, sort of same point as Ma Nonu. Just that person that can do everything. A few for Wales. There's some Jamie Roberts I've seen. I've seen some Alan Wynne-Jones. One that's very interesting is Josh Navidi. And I think it's actually a pretty good shout because he's that sort of like Swiss Army knife that he's quite good at a few things or at a lot of things like you want from your blindside flank. So therefore, he can fill any gaps if you don't have Falatau, if you don't have, a seven like Tipperick, or you don't have Lydiate, or whatever the case is. So I can see why someone mentioned Navidi.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think now, like, it took a while for him to really get in the groove for Wales or really get selected. But then when he did get his chance, he never really looked back. He always seemed to give like 7.5, 8 out of 10. Like, if he wasn't here, if he was so-so with ball in hand, he was always putting in like 1,000 tackles. Like, he was incredible.
And then for England, two very interesting shots, both in the midfield, two different midfielders, is Manu Tuilagi and Walt Greenwood. Obviously, they play very differently. Greenwood is very interesting because I think he's one of those maybe not as appreciated at the time. But, you know, the more distance you have from his career, the more you're like, oh, someone that can sort of play people into gaps, not the fastest person in the world, but also can take gaps himself. Like, that's quite valuable. And then, there's always a mini national crisis every time Manu Tuilagi wasn't available the last few years.
Yeah, I thought Greenwood was a great shot. I know he wore 13, but he was an inside center. And the thing with Manu, I feel that England are able to get over that when Tuilagi leaves. That's the one difference. I think they are able to fill that gap. But I think it's going to take a while first because, I don't know, I'd prefer Lawrence at 13, but he can play 12 comfortably. I just think, I'm not sure. I think they'll be okay there, but only time will tell, you know?
Yeah, I still think that they need someone else outside of Lawrence. I mean, Slade is... what, 30 probably, or just about 30. So maybe in the long term, the Slade, can Slade go for the next few years? Maybe not. You need that person that either can let Lawrence play at 13 and just absolutely terrorize outside defenders, or have a proper 13 that can combine with Lawrence and sort of dovetail in and out with them. So it's, I think it's Max Ojomo, the Bath guy that plays with Lawrence quite a bit. I love how they dovetail with each other. Like, you don't know who's standing where, you don't know who's going where. And I think Lawrence, because he's like a 12 and a half, he can probably play both roles. You need maybe another center that can do that with him.
So if Slade is playing 13, you have to have a 12 that plays towards the ball. You have to.
Yeah.
And that's why Tu Lagi does so well. I think Lawrence as a naturally will try and play outside. Like, he's got that mindset about him just because I think he's a better 13. So it might, I'm not saying it's not in his wheelhouse to always play towards the ball to free up Slade, but it would be a little bit more unnatural for him. So if you're going to play him at 12, I think you should have another 13. But Slade's rejuvenate his career a little bit. They're going to need to have a 12 that really, like, just hunts the inside shoulder of the other 12 and the outside shoulder of the 10 to just open up that space.
Yeah. And then some non-rugby shouts on this tweet as well. I think Jean-Calais got the most... There's a lot of Jean-Calais love.
I retweeted one and then they started, like, flying in. So I was like, that was quite funny. Have we ever replaced Jean-Calais?
I mean, you can't. I think that's the simple answer. Like, probably the best, or at least one of the best all-rounders ever, can bat to a very elite level, can bowl to quite elite level too. Like, there's not many countries that have even something even close to it. So that's going to be always a difficult thing to do. Like, I think we realize now how spoiled we were having someone that can bat at like 3 or 4 and also bowl like, you know, third or fourth as well.
So I was thinking now, Kala, you're going to need 3 players to replace him because you're going to need a bat and you're going to need a bowler, but you're also going to need a flipping good slip fielder because there's not many bowlers that sit there either, you know?
Yeah. I'm trying to think, what's the rugby equivalent of Jacques Callis? Like, someone that basically fulfills, like you said, 3 roles like that well. Maybe it's a stretch to say someone like DuPont, but like, it's
DuPont,
you're not just
Jamison Gibson Park has now showed that he's got the ability to play across the back line.
Yeah. So you're not just replacing like his core role, you're replacing his secondary and his like tertiary role as well. And I think that's what like imbalances sides.
Yeah. Hachiva Daimani. He played in the backs. He plays up front. He plays Lucy and well, but he played in the backs. He can hold up at 15 if you need.
And sometimes he wears the jersey of another team. So yeah, he's clearly a triple threat.
That's the best. Hey, speak to my agent. I've ever seen. That's the best I've ever seen.
I don't think maybe I wasn't on the podcast the week you guys talked about it, but I still want to know what we would have done if he didn't score.
He just would have got hot. Wearing 2 rugby jerseys in a rugby game, a bit too much. But that's the kind of player he is. He's like, I'm here to show this jersey when I score a try, so he'll make a plan to score a try, you know?
No, fair enough. Yeah. True character of the game. So, brilliant. Sean, I think we've moved to the action this weekend.
Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
Juan Martin Hernandez for the Pumas. There's a player that they haven't really replaced.
And I think, you know why I think that's a very good shout is because, I mean, yes, I know he played quite a lot of 10, but he was also basically a second distributor with Kontopomi. And I mean, De La Fuente is a very good serviceable inside center. He's obviously got a ton of caps, but he's not maybe the second distributor. And imagine Hernandez with Sanchez, like if their ages were a bit more mashed up with all the outside back talent that Argentina currently has with, you know, Malia, Delgui, Cordero times 2 or 3 or whatever it is. So that would have really unleashed that back line. Never mind his kicking game too.
Yeah. And he can cover 15. But you'd have had him and Boffelli in the same team, I think you would have been in a good space. But agreed, because he also played 12, I think. So I it would have been great. Like, that second playmaker is probably, I think you've hit the nail on the head in terms of where the RGs need to work a little bit, is have that option of pivot, other pivot option, should I say.
Mm. So yeah, hopefully Chocobares can kind of fulfill that role there. Okay, but yeah, very good first phase. Again, shout out to the Dirt Trackers for participating. They've been really good. I think, Sean, you've cooked with your last few first phases. They've been getting the Twitter streets going.
Love it. Thank you.
Okay, let us go into the URC matches that happened this weekend. We're going to focus mostly on the South African teams. And full disclosure, unfortunately, between Sharky and I, we didn't watch the two away games, the Lions and the Bulls. Rian Lowe must absolutely hate me, because anytime I watch the Lions, they look pretty crazy and average. And then when I don't watch them, they have one of their best performances that they ever do. So what we're going to do with the Lions and the Bulls is probably talk a bit more prospectively about, you know, the Lions' chances of making the knockouts, the Bulls and their big game against Leinster. But we'll focus on the Sharks and the Stormers game, and we can start. Sean, actually, let's start with the Stormers, because you were there. You were not on the ground, but at the ground at least. Unless, I don't know, Sean, maybe you did play a few minutes. Who knows?
No. I should have hooked. Try to get Cooks to hook me up with a ground clearance. But I was basically 4 or 5 rows back in the corner where the first try was scored off the Manny kickoff. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Stormers played really well. I thought this would be maybe a bit of a trickier game than it was. 43-21 is actually maybe a little bit flattering for Edinburgh, I would say, arguably. But, yeah, Sean, what was your view of the game?
Well, yeah, it was amazing. I took my little one, my couple of my mates and I, we took the kids and went down. It was really good. There was a lot of action, and as I mentioned, that first try. But the Stormers looked good. I actually predicted they were going to score in the 40s. I don't know why I thought that. I just figured they were going to just be a little bit better, but then realized that they were coming back off a little bit of a break. So I got a bit nervous, because the Stormers sometimes kind of wobble a little bit, but they didn't. Really good. Evan Roos was all over. There were a couple, like I think he got a slow start and he played really well. But the standout for me was Damien Willemse.
Yeah.
It is clear, it is so evident that he is a top international player by what he does in that game. He's just everywhere. He looks calm. He always seems to be in the right place. He doesn't ever look like he's rushed for anything. So, yeah. And I also, so interestingly enough, I thought Wandi Simelane was, I didn't think initially that he was good. And then I thought back and watched a little bit of the highlights. And he actually got on quite well. And it's great. Like, we've all been waiting to see that. The one thing that I thought that, and you've rightfully, Tala, put me, like, you just highlighted that it's his first game back and fitness may be an issue. But I thought he was a little bit slow. But other than that, I'm so worried about him being so attack-minded that he's got like a winger mentality in the 13 jersey, where he's not always looking for the passes, or he's kind of go solo. And it didn't look like that. So yeah, that's great. Very interesting when Ruan Nel comes back into the mix, what you're going to do there. But I think Nel cruises in right now.
Yeah. Look, let me just focus on Willemse for a little bit. Yeah. If you're in the Cape Town area, or Damien Willemse comes to your town, and he's playing for the Stormers or the Springboks, watch him. Like, he's, at least in the Stormer setup, he's the one player that stands out as, okay, this guy's a world-class player. Like, his decision-making, the time that he has when he has the ball, his execution of his skills, if it's passing or kicking or running or tackling, like, he's just absolutely elite at that. I think we mentioned it a few months ago when I watched him live. I also realized he's a good second ref. Very much in the ref's ear and the assistant ref's ear about any decision that goes against the Stormers. But he is, and it does not shade on anyone else that was on the field. I mean, you know, the Moni Lebok was there, Frans Malaba was there, Evan Roos was there, Hamish Watson was there, but he's the player that always stands out for me when I watch the Stormers live. Like, he controls the game so well. And every week, that shout from Cooks that he's going to be World Rugby Player of the Year this year or next year looks more and more realistic.
Yeah, true. Just a little bit to build on that, but slightly off the topic, is Willemse and Manny Lubbock both stayed over and above, like went over and above the call of duty when they were signing autographs. Manny Lubbock actually had to be taken back in. Someone came out to come and fetch him. It was incredible seeing them just being with the fans, interacting with the fans, like just photos, autographs, everything. It was so amazing, and it's so great for the kids and the fans. But back onto the rugby, Tala, I agree totally. Cooks has got a great shot there, and it won't be any surprise. It's not going to be like a random choice when he wins it. I think he's really that good. And also seeing that, I don't know, like that step that he does, well, his step, but that he kind of drops a shoulder and glides through alive was actually amazing.
Yeah, he's great. Just on the Simulani thing, yeah, I think on the balance, a really good performance. And at least, I think Ronell is out for the rest of the season. So, I mean, to get him as a second, maybe third choice option at 13 is great. And I think playing next to Dan Duplessis will bring out the best out of him as well, because his ability to just, you know, stay on Dan Duplessis' pocket and wait for those offloads as he goes into the line and takes up two or three defenders is going to be vital for the Stormers. So hopefully,
imagine when Willemse plays the 12 and he plays the 13 when you're talking about offloads.
Yeah. So I think he's going to be really good with that. And I did like that he tried to connect with the wings. I know with the Lions, sometimes he did maybe get a bit tunnel visioned with not passing to his wings, but he was trying to connect with Zas and Hotzenberg. So I think he did a really good job. Look, if anything, we know what the Stormers' record is of if you doubt a player, if you think a player's career might be sort of on the downturn, they fix you up. They're like, you know, Extreme Makeover or whatever those types of shows are. They'll fix you up and you and you look better than you did before. So I'm very excited to see how Simulani goes. The pace thing is true. Let's see in a few weeks' time if it's still a problem. And we'll see, obviously, how he goes defensively, especially in 2 weeks' time when the Stormers are on the Champions Cup. But yeah, I will take that for a good first performance.
Yeah. What I will say is I would like to see the Stormers players working a little bit more on the softer skills, like the passing. I saw a bunch of passes just really not hitting the targets. Like, even if the players got them, they just weren't hitting the targets. And I'm not at all talking about the Willemse chicken wing pass, because I think if he doesn't square up like that, the space isn't created. So I'm not including that. But I think just like the basic stuff, the not under pressure passes are really not hitting the target properly. And yes, it was the first game back, so hopefully they can sort of polish that off a little bit better. But I would like to see their passing just a little bit more accurate, because it'll change things for them. And with that back line, they're deadly. So front foot ball and quick passes and accurate passes will hurt the opposition.
I'm surprised you haven't shouted out, I think probably one of your players that you like shouting out for in the Storm is Ben Jason Dixon, because I thought he had a really good game on Saturday.
He's a beast, man. He's big. I knew he was big. I didn't realize he was that big. He looks solid on the park, but man, he gets shoulders on properly. I missed out on that. He had a good game. Super impressed. He's going to be his role, like that hybrid lock flanker role, is a very, very important role in South African rugby moving forward. I think quite clear that we're looking for players like that. And every team can use that as an option, because you know what happens. I mean, you need players to shift around every now and then in emergencies. But he's got a bright future. But man, he can put in some tackles. Yo.
And then, yeah, I think the last few things to shout out, I mean, I thought Namakaba was quite good in his performance. Obviously, I think he's probably more of a, like, we don't have too many sixes these days that are like just great turnover merchants, and he was really good in that area. Saturday, I think we did say Evan Riss earlier. Like, yeah, he's just seeing him on outside channels just always quite scary. Also, Salman Murat, I'll just also shout him out a little bit to say, like, he's looking pretty good since he came back from injury. I think he's basically starting to put together the type of form that obviously will be interesting for the Springboks as well. So that's really good. And seeing him and Ruben van Heerden combined together is going to be very scary. And welcome back to Frans Malherbe. Yeah, obviously a great... not a bad person to return to your team at this time of the season.
No, really good. It was good. It was a good game. It was good to watch. But it's great to see the Springboks come back. Frans Malherbe also probably needs a couple more games just to get back in the groove. So I think he's actually come back at a great time of the year for the Stormers, especially.
And then, please describe how it looked live seeing Vilemani Mata just run through people.
I kept talking about him. I can't believe I needed you to prompt me. He is huge. He is huge. Like, so I always say, if a player looks fast in a professional environment, like, doesn't matter what sport, if the player looks faster, like significantly faster than other players, he's ridiculously fast because they're all pros. Vilemani Mata is... he looks bigger than everyone. And that's crazy if you think about the other players on the park. I mean, he looked comfortably bigger than all their locks. Their locks didn't really look... their locks aren't that big from what I remember. But man, he's a beast. And he runs so hard. That's the other thing. Like, he's a big guy, but he runs like he's a little guy trying to make a big gap, you know? And that's flipping scary.
Yeah, poor Manny Lebok, obviously getting cut up from... catching the end of Mata's boot as well.
Yeah,
but good win for the Stormers. They are not in the best position. I mean, it seems like they're going to have to do it the hard way if they want to, you know, host knockout games like they usually do. There's still a good chance, and most of their games are at home. But yeah, they'll need to get going with you know, getting into a good run of form for the next few weeks. Also good that they beat Edinburgh because they basically leapfrogged them on the table. They're fifth, but the points difference between fifth and 10th is 2 points. So it's not like it means, you know, too much yet. But Sean, let's go to the Sharks. Probably their best win of the tournament takes them out of the basement of the URC as well, as they beat Ulster. They beat them 22 points to 12. This is a game that I watched, and look, I think the first thing that's impressive to me is I think this is finally the first time the Sharks have a good balance of Springboks, like regular URC type players, you know, the Mtunus, the Butelezis, the Chutukas, that they also playing well, and then also the young talent that's proven themselves in the last few weeks. So Ethan Hooker and Edwin Cater are, I think, really stood out for the Sharks. And yeah, even Siamasoko, not the cleanest game, I think, at 10, but I think in general, he did really well too. So I think the balance of the team is now correct. It's now just a matter of whether they build some consistency from you.
Yeah. I want to say that you almost feel like they're one win away from kind of coming right, but I think we said that about 20 times last season. The hard thing for the Sharks is actually stringing this together. But if we're honest, they have got the perfect opportunity now because they've got quite a chunk of games left to go. You know, they want to make a statement in the URC, but obviously go further in the Challenge Cup. So, yeah. But I thought, I mean, just reading up on how Hooker was playing, apparently he was on fire. But Tyler, the one thing I do want to ask you, those three yellow cards on 64 minutes. Please tell me what happened because it was
chaos. So, okay. First of all, Sharks are attacking. They're in the Ulster 22. Yeah, I'm just trying to also remember quickly. But basically, Ulster just scored and made it about 17-12, I think. So Ulster's coming back. There's a threat that they could take this game away. We've seen the Sharks just melt away in these pressure situations. And good on the Sharks. They actually came back well from that Ulster try. So I think they're in the 22 rolling more situation. Then it's a one out runner. I think it's Henderson and his lock partner Treadwell. They tackle, I can't remember who it was, but Henderson was high. He catches the person on the head. Referee blows it up, penalty. And as that situation is happening and we're pulling Henderson off the Sharks player and all that sort of stuff, then it gets a bit feisty. So Vince Chituka comes into the scene and he's, I think he gets the yellow card for essentially instigating the situation and comes in, causes a big scene basically by, I think it was Henderson or maybe it actually was Treadwell by the collar. Then Hume also comes in and then basically it's between Chituka and Hume. So I didn't necessarily think it was yellow card worthy, but it was that sort of point in the game where the referee, Whitehouse? Yes, Ben Whitehouse was the referee. He needed to get some control in the game because there's just a few weird decisions that were happening. Like the Treadwell try came from, I think he was offside. It was basically the Sharks had a ruck 5 meters from the line and then the ball just popped out magically. Obviously, there was a hand or two in the ground. And then Treadwell was probably, I don't think he was fully onside in collecting the ball to score the try. And it was that sort of game where there was a few weird tries. I think the Sharks also scored a try that I don't think was a try because I don't think, I think there was a knock-on before they scored it. It was just that sort of game where the referee wasn't quite in control. So this fight happens. And I think the referee was like, look, I need to just reassert some authority. So Henderson gets a yellow card for the high tackle, which is fair. I don't think it was more than a yellow card. Chituka and Hume were called up by the referee. And I think Hume was also thinking, okay, I'm the new captain, so I'm probably being called to just tell my team to calm down. And ref's like, you two, stop what you're doing. They shake hands. They think they're about to go away. And then Whitehouse produce a yellow card on both of them as well, which is hilarious. Because they all look at each other and then look at the ref and they're like, oh, for us? And they sort of go off and shrug their shoulders. And yeah, I think they made up after that. So it was quite hilarious. So I think the ref was trying to reassert his authority there. I don't think the yellow cards were necessary for Chituka and Hume, but I think it was the ref just trying to wrest back some control. So it was a bit of a melee. Two teams did get a bit involved, but it wasn't the most dramatic one you'll ever see.
Yeah, yeah. I tell you, from just having a look at the numbers, I'm looking at Makuzola Mapimpi. What he made 6 out of 6 tackles, just looked like he had a really good game. But it just reminds me, like prior to the World Cup, how much heat he was getting. Just everyone just wants to drop the guy. But then on Chasing the Sun on Sunday, Aki also has a little moment. And yeah, I just look at that guy and what he's done, where he's come from, what he's done, but what he means to so many people. He's borderline get a statue kind of a guy because I think a lot of people, fans are really, across the world, not just South Africa, are very quick to want to get rid of someone in a team if they think someone else is playing better, regardless of what this other person adds and where they add it. But Mapimpi's going to, if he hasn't already, will go down as probably one of our greatest wingers. And his numbers won't always show it because he hasn't been there for like 30 years. But the value he's added has been incredible. So it's so good to see him playing well for the Sharks as well.
Look, and just talking specifically on this game, Mapimpi had one little grabber that created a try. He had another grabber that created a big line break as well. Like, I don't think the kicking game was something that Mapimpi had like 2, 4, 5 years ago, but it's definitely something he has now. And I thought the first time was more, I was like, oh, maybe that was just a bit of a mistake. And now that when he did the second time, I was like, okay, maybe this is something that he's added to the arsenal. So look, he's 33 and wingers ages, that's like 102. And him adding new skills or executing on those newer skills in the rugby field, that's a very good sign. So look, it may, if not for the box, but at least for the Sharks, like the Sharks know they're sorted at 11. Also, a big shout out to Lukanya Am. I think that was easily his best performance in a long time.
Oh, lovely.
Not quite at, you know, the 100% Lukanya Am we saw in 2021 or 2022, I should say, but very much putting things together. I think he enjoyed playing next to Ethan Hooker. You can kind of see the rationale for buying Andre Esterhazy back. Just having that big ball-carrying center that can just soak up defenders and you can allow your outside center to cook outside of him. So I think he was quite good at that. He had a classic turnover during the game. Like, he's making those passes again. So slowly but surely, he's kind of putting it back. But look, I think the Springboks for the Sharks were quite good. I think Oxenche and Vincent Koch basically won the game for the Sharks off the bench, which obviously they're quite used to doing that for the Springboks too. And Ulster, I mean, they're not in the best form. It's not like it's the best Ulster side you've ever faced. But they were in the game, I think, with the first 15. But then basically once the new props came on and gave the game some impact, like, that was basically where the Sharks won the game on Saturday. So really good performance for the Sharks. I think there's still... I'm not saying that they've fixed all their issues. There's still some... The problem with the Sharks, I think, Sharky, is that they're bad moments in games, which all teams have, regardless of how good you are. All teams have a bad moment in the game. But their bad moments are really bad. Oh, my goodness. They don't recover from them.
Yeah.
Yeah. This game, at least, they had a bit of a dip. It looked like Ulster was coming back. We've seen in many games this year where... the team starts coming back, the Sharks just basically tap out. This game, they actually stood the test of time. They held on to the rope. They won it out and they wrested back control in the game. So look, I think some good signs for the Sharks. And if, you know, you can build on, you know, 100 Jakobs that scrummed really well against Steven Kitsoff. You can build on Pepsi and Chutuka looking really good in that loose chair. You can build on Masuku looking a lot more short at 10, you can build on Hooker and Keita, and then you add the sprinkling of Springboks. Now you've got a team that can do something. So, yeah, Sharky, it's now about if they can make a run in the Challenge Cup. I mean, it's not a team you want to face in the Challenge Cup, given all the superstars they have.
Yeah, true. And if they start sniffing, there are individuals there, and the setup there, they are too good not to build on what they've got. But I mean, we were burnt by this last year. So if they can string two or three wins together, the landscape will change significantly. And I think for Sharks fans, that's probably what they've been hoping for since the return to rugby for the Sharks after COVID. Quick one. Isn't Hooker a 13? Isn't that his first choice position, or is he always played 12?
I think he is a 13. Yeah. Wow. I think he played 13 for the under-20s.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. For him to stand out like that at 12, that's incredible. Funny thing, yeah. We've spoken so much about Lukanya Am and how he can play 12. You would have thought in that situation they would have put him at 12, but obviously what they did worked out. I mean, who am I?
Yeah. Look, and I think from what I remember seeing of Hooker in the under-20s, I know he has, like, I'm not saying he was playing like just as a route one direct center, but I know he has the offloading game. He can bring people into the game as well. So he has that, you know, that 13 ability. But at 12, you know, I don't know how many members are in the Ethan Hooker fan club yet, but I've seen enough to be like, okay, I can get on this train. I think this guy is going to be a really good rugby player. And at the very least, he's going to be great for the Sharks. But yeah, I can see his career getting into more than that. Like, his ability, like I said, he can draw defenders, which is great. But there's also his ability in the outside lines as well, given that he's a 13, that makes sense. Like, he's just able to, you know, support, have the right supporting lines, run, make the right decisions, draw and pass. Like, he's got those skills. So him making an impact in a team full of superstars, like that's a very good sign for his career. And his defense is really good too. So you've got the best of both worlds with a player like him.
That's amazing. And as you mentioned, with Esthazen coming up, like you can almost see that trio of midfielders sticking with the Sharks for a while and Hart being so beneficial for all of them. Because the truth is Esthazen can play 13 if you need. Lukanyan can play 12 if you need. And we've clearly seen that Hooker can play 12 and 13. So things are looking good. I mean, don't make all the Sharks fans. Don't get us all like hyped up now like it's going to happen. Like as I always talk about those seesaw moments, you know, that seesaw that's kind of rocking on the center and then it falls one way. Like which way is it going to fall? Because we're so used to the seesaw, our end falling, the Sharks end falling into the shit. Maybe it can fall into the roses for a bit.
Yeah, I think if I was the Sharks, I mean, the Springboks you kind of have to manage, but I would try to keep the same team basically throughout the rest of the season, at least until you're out of the Challenge Cup. Like, get them to have a bit more chemistry with each other. Like, have the Tunu, Bonambi, Jakobs trio working together. Maybe Kunie Osezen comes back. It looks like George Cronier, unfortunately, that was the one bad thing. He injured himself quite seriously in the game, had to be taken off on a stretcher, which is really unfortunate because he was on such good form. But, you know, I'm not sure if Skumbuzo Noche is what his health is. But, you know, you have Buthelezi, you have Chituka, you have Labuschagne, like build on them as a unit. You know, you can manage Itzebeth, of course, but Conrad Rahl's not a bad option. I think he's a pretty good young lock. He gets feisty. He was also in amongst it in the fight as well. So build on him and having Khaban Khumbula there. And then build on that Lukanyo Am and Hooker combination. I think that was probably only the second time they played with each other. So there is combinations that they can build on, and hopefully there isn't too many injuries and they can just see how far this takes them. They can have like a Toulon in 2022 run to the Challenge Cup here.
Oof, imagine.
Ironically, yeah, but Etzebeth was in the same team.
That's true. That's very true. Just a little something. I actually forgot to mention it, tracking back a little bit, and I'm sorry to spoiler alert for you, Tala, but talking about Makazulo Mapimpi and just what a treasure he is to all of us fans and South African rugby. But there was a moment there when they were talking and he was busy chatting and he just basically said 2019 was amazing for him and he was just looking to get a house so he could buy a house so he could watch the 2023 Rugby World Cup. Like that was his plan. He never thought he'd be involved. So yeah, just amazing.
Yeah. Anyway. Sean, you're right. This is going to be, I mean, yeah, he's a legend. I think his stats are going to make him a legend. I mean, what's it? 40 odd tests, I think close to 30 tries. That's pretty good. And then just the off the field story is going to make him like one of the most remembered Springboks ever. Like that's a success story of, you know, things happening in the right way and developing someone from not the traditional schools and from his situation and bring him all the way to the top. I think that's a really good story to tell.
Yeah. I mean, he played at Border and then him and Lukanya Am played for EP.
I mean, they played at Border together even.
Oh, I did not know that. But I look at that and how many rugby players have made it really high coming out of Border in the last 15, 20 years? I don't know the answer, but I don't think a lot. But the thing is, I just look back and I get like hot flushes thinking about how easily we could have missed them too. Like how many players have we missed?
Like very easily.
How many players out of the EP Kings went on to go really high? You know, it was Hadley Parks is one, but you know, Mapimpi's the other. Like a lot of guys didn't, and I know I'm missing people, so I apologize. But like my point is just like how easily we could have missed like two of our most talented backline players ever, two that basically took us to the 2019 Rugby World Cup final and win it, you know?
Yeah, that's very true. Sean, let's just talk about the two inland sides that went overseas. So we mentioned the Lions beating Connacht 38 points to 14 with a red card in like the 15th minute of the game. And they scored six tries against Connacht.
it was a prop as well that they lost. But we mentioned that I didn't watch a game, but I saw that losing a prop so early is massive, especially like the quality of prop. But the thing is that win pushed the Lions above Connacht, and it was at the sports ground. And yes. I saw something today, and I don't know if it's true, but someone said the last South African side to win there was a Jake White side. So I assume it was a South Africa or a South African A side, like way back when. But
that makes sense.
Like, that's a long time ago. And the one thing that we all, South Africans all know that's come from the URC is that Connacht is a shithole to play in. Like, it's always windy and always rainy. Like, that's one thing we know. But that's an incredible win. Like, bonus point win with 14 men at the sport. It wasn't at the sports ground. It's Dexcom Stadium. Yes. Maybe that's the same place. I don't know. But anyway, crazy.
No, okay. To be fair to the sports ground, it was quite sunny. It didn't look like it was that windy on that day. So maybe that helped the Lions. They didn't bring their weather. They didn't pack it in their bag. And big shout out to Konrad van Vuren, who played 60 minutes at prop, replacing Asenathi Ntlabaganye after he got his red card. So, you know, props these days, if they play, you know, 45, 50 minutes, that's quite a lot. So that's a big game for him to pull through. And, you know, he made it out of it. And the Lions, I think their scrum was struggling a little bit from what I saw in the highlights, but, you know, they came out of it. One player I want to shout out before we talk just generally is, and sort of this more general, but also just seeing the highlights, is JC Pretorius. So obviously we know him from the Sevens. He's a really great Sevens player. Every time he comes on for the field, onto the field in the 15s, I was like, okay, he's replacing at the wing, but he obviously plays at flank and he does a lot at flank. Like, he's so busy. I mean, we know that from the Sevens players, but the impact that he makes at being like an eighth backline player, but also just absolutely deleting people in the tackle, making turnovers, also just making big offloads and carries that can put people through. Like, he's such a big difference maker. I mean, it's very easy to see who you can compare him to from the Lions in the past that also came from the Sevens. And he really does have that ability, like Quagga Smith, to just impact the game and just to spark you know, a break or a big turnover or a big tackle or whatever the case is. Like, we know the quality of the Sevens players when they play and they figure out the right position. So yeah, he's been a really big difference maker, I think, for the Lions. I was actually surprised he stayed on the field for the red card, because they decided to replace Chituka, Manny Chituka. And I thought, you know, JC would have made a lot more sense, but he played brilliantly and he was the man of the match.
Oh, wow. I didn't know he was man of the match. I agree with you in terms of that early on, who you're going to replace. You definitely want to have a big guy in it, but he's obviously been performing at trainings and all that. But having said that, I have been impressed by watching him play. Whether he's come off the bench or started, he's been excellent and busy. So yeah, that's interesting. Because the thing is Chituka's got a little bit more sort of history and clout behind him. So that's also why I thought that would be an interesting one. So thanks for highlighting that. But also great to see Hendrikse start and push him through. I also heard amazing things from Eric Cronier at 13. Obviously, they missed a star, but I heard that Cronier was pretty handy.
Yeah, I mean, he scored a really good try where he just stepped inside of like a few players. So Cronier's history, he's from Zebre, right? He played for Zebre the last few years.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, a decent player to have as like a backup 13. Obviously, we know Henk van Veek is really talented and he's the future, but he played really well. I mean, as far as a player I've seen a lot of, but, you know, in the highlights at least, you can just see, you know, his footwork is really good. His passing is really good. He plays well off Marius Lowe. Yeah, he's definitely a good replacement to have if either two, because I think he can play 12 as well, if either of Lowe or Van Veek aren't available.
Yeah, nice. Well, what a great win. Flip it.
No, it's probably the biggest win for the Lions this season. So, as you mentioned, Sean, it puts them above Connacht by a point. They're at eighth place now. So the interesting thing for the Lions and actually for all the South African teams is for the rest of the URC, the Lions, in the case of the Lions, they have only one game away from South Africa, which is the game they have against Ospreys this week. Then they have their Challenge Cup game against Benetton. Then after that, they have Leinster, Munster, Cardiff, Glasgow, and then the Stormers in Cape Town. So five games in South Africa, four of them in Joburg. And there's a, Gavin Rich wrote this article for this, for Supersport. He said that there's a chance, not a good chance, but a decent chance at least, that we can have three South African teams in the top four, because all the South African teams have two or less overseas games left. They basically, the teams that they're playing against are teams that are in this top eight race. So you can basically win and take points off a team as well at the same time. And, you know, the Sharks can also do us some favors and, you know, knock off some points from these big teams as well. There's a situation where maybe, I mean, Leinster will probably be first, but where it's the Bulls, Lions, and the Stormers that are following them. And for the Lions, look, they just have to get consistent at home, because I think their home form has actually been weirdly off considering their altitude advantage. But, you know, Leinster's probably going to take, I mean, let's be honest, Leinster's probably going to be taking the Sam Pendergrast 15 to Joburg, especially if they go far in the Champions Cup. So there's a probable win there. I'm never going to count out Munster. They're probably going to just beat teams in South Africa out of spite. But, you know, Glasgow away is also, I mean, a tough game, but a doable game, especially if Glasgow is still, you know, involved in Europe or trying to prioritize other things. There's a world where the Lions, if they get 3-4 out of six, they're at least in the knockouts, which is obviously a big achievement for them, but they can maybe sneak into third or fourth place.
That's amazing. I was looking at that and getting quite excited, but then when you reeled off who they're going to play, I got a bit worried, because like Leinster, Glasgow, Munster are that's some serious play. Leinster could very well send maybe an in-between side, not like full strength and not under 20s, because I think they've learned a lot of lessons the last couple of years, but they're obviously going to want to secure home ground advantage. So they could very well, you know, the nerves could be there, slip up could come. But flip, we're in for an incredible run into the final though.
Yeah. Look, and if nothing else, I hope it doesn't amount to this only for the Lions, but the Lions and Sharks can be massive spoilers for these overseas teams that come to South Africa and boost the Bulls' chances of being first in the overall log, or boost the Stormers' chance of making the top four. So that's obviously a big opportunity.
Yeah, you remember the Stormers, the Super Rugby Stormers, like you knew they weren't going to go deep in the tournament, but you knew they were going to stuff up the tournament for some team. And that's what the Sharks are like. Like, they're not going to go deep in this, but they're gaining form and momentum now where they could absolutely spoil it for someone.
100%. Yeah, look, with the Sharks as in their role in this, like they've got, I'll get their fixtures just now, but they also have a big role to play in ensuring the US, well, the South African URC teams can go far. So they can take points off Edinburgh this following weekend. They've got Glasgow coming to them. Okay, Scarlets is not really big, and they've got Benetton in their second last game. So if they can get wins off
Sorry? That Warriors game is going to make a difference.
Yeah. So they beat Glasgow. That opens up a space in the top four for the likes of the Stormers or the Lions. They beat Benetton. It maybe even helps the Lions to secure top eight. Cardiff, they have a game against Cardiff, and Cardiff is still in the conversation for the knockouts, but they can effectively knock them out if they're not knocked out already. So there's a lot riding in the last few games. There's six of them left, and for most of the South African teams, the majority of them are in South Africa. So there's really big opportunity here for the teams to still go far in the URC.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
So, yeah, well, speaking of Leinster and speaking of the Bulls, I guess, we can talk about their win against Dragons, 31 points to 10. They got the bonus point at the end, I think literally in the last play of the game. So it was a bit of a difficult evening, but you know what? The Bulls did play a bit of a chop and change side. They obviously were resting some of their players, but also playing the likes of Moody at 13 and Aronson and Rue. Were in the team. So it was a bit of a mix and mash team, but you know, ultimately the Bulls got the 5 points, which is really important. I think that's the first priority. But Sean, we have a delicious fixture awaiting us on Friday evening with Leinster playing the Bulls on Friday evening. Probably most of the Irish players will be back for Leinster. And given how big this game could go a long way in deciding who's top of the log at the end of the season. So, Sean, what are you thinking as the Bulls also go back to the place they beat Leinster 2 years ago to make the URC final? They beat Leinster in that semi-final.
That's the thing. The aura of Leinster and who they are and where they play doesn't hit so hard with the Bulls and the South African sides, but specifically the Bulls. And just because the Bulls have beaten them there before, but also because Leinster haven't gone deep in the tournament. So it's huge. And a Bulls with that attitude and with Jake White and the form that they're currently in against the Leinster side, they could be welcoming back some players. And, you know, that whole coming, returning back to play after a while could be a little bit shaky. It's massive. This game's not going to be a blowout, and it's going to be a cracker and probably the game of the weekend.
Yeah, easily. I mean, yeah, just thinking about some of the personal matchups, Portal have to scrum against Volko Low. You've got Nokia going up against James Ryan. You've got Josh van der Vlier against Marco van Staden. You've got, hopefully... we'll see if Cameron Hanekom is, I'm not sure if he's able to play or not, but at least Aruch Lowe against Kalen Doris. In the back line, you've got Papier in really good form against Jamison Gibson-Park, who's obviously played really well in the Six Nations. James Lowe will be duking out against Kanan Moody. Yeah, I actually now remember that Kanan Moody, this was the game that I think probably for the rest of the country, it really convinced us that, okay, this guy's going to be a really good player when he played that semi-final and just absolutely was almost faultless in that semi-final a few years ago. There's just so many matchups that are going to happen. I hope Hugo Keenan is back fit because he can also have a matchup against Willy LaRue. Like this, yeah, there's so much to look forward to in this game. Also, this might be the biggest sort of Jacques Nienaber test to see what the influence he has on Leinster. Are they... there's a few things that he has up his sleeve for the South African sides. Yeah, like you said, Sean, I think the Leinster's not going to just disregard this because there's Champions Cup next week. They want to put themselves in a good position to go as far as possible. So I think this is going to be full steam for both teams on Friday night.
Has to be. Absolutely has to be. You can't even be looking at the Champions Cup. It's really... about the winner of this will very likely finish top of the log. So you have to go balls to the wall.
Yeah, it's going to be a massive match. Quick prediction for that game, Sean?
Bulls.
Ooh,
Bulls.
Spicy.
I think they'll win it by five. It could very well come down to one of those massive defensive efforts to win the game. It could be, I think it's going to be that close. Someone's going to be attacking to win it. But yeah, I think the Bulls take it.
Yeah. Ugh, it's tough to predict against Leinster in Dublin. So I'm going to plead the fifth. very quickly on the other South African game, Sharks, Edinburgh.
I tell you, I would have been arguing about this game normally, but Edinburgh obviously going to want to change things from the weekend, but the Sharks are looking to gain momentum. I'm actually going to go Sharks. And This was the Sharks' downfall. My fault.
I'm assuming the likes of, you know, Ewan Ashman and Luke Crosby and some of their like regular Scottish players, like the Scotland national team players, are going to come back into the squad. I don't know if Boffelli got injured just before the game, so I don't know if it's a serious one.
Duan Funamavo obviously didn't play against the Stormers, but he was down on the field, so I don't think he's injured. He'll be back.
Yeah. So I'm assuming this is full steam Edinburgh, which, yeah, this will make it a very interesting game. So all these nice things I've said about the Sharks, clip them up. They're probably not going to be applicable in a week's time. So, yeah, let's see. Hopefully the Sharks can, you know, bring this their A game, or at least not have an absolute F game when, you know, they have that 20 minutes or 30 minutes of, you know, toughness in the game.
Yep.
Then Lions are playing Ospreys away from home. Biggish game. Obviously, we talked about the Lions, their upcoming fixtures. The Ospreys are probably the easiest game they'll have in the next six fixtures.
Yeah, but I look at this fixture and I get nervous, though. That's the thing that upsets me. They should win it. I'll go Lions just purely because of what they did this weekend and the form they've been in. They're really just giving everyone the bird and playing really well. So Lions, bonus point.
Ooh. Look, Ospreys are quite good at home. They've won, I think, more than they've lost at home. They beat the Sharks in Swansea. Yeah. If the Lions are also able to do this, it'll be big. I mean, Ospreys are also not... I mean, I think I got Cardiff and Ospreys confused. Ospreys are the ones that are still in contention for the URC knockouts from the Welsh team. So
they're in 11th.
Ospreys need this win. Sorry?
They're 11th at the moment. So it's a big game.
They 5 points behind, or 4 points behind 8th, which are the Lions. So yeah, this could be a season defining match. I mean, the Lions also got some help with Benetton losing to Scarlets in the last minute. So yeah, this could be one of those coin toss where the season is defined. So hopefully the Lions can pick up where they left off. Stormers, Ulster, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be very difficult to see Ulster winning, but at least we'll see Spicy Plum back in Cape Town.
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous about this game for the Stormers. Yeah, the thing is, I feel that this game's going to probably start as a bit of an arm wrestle, and then the Stormers are obviously going to want to kick on. But I don't think the win is a foregone conclusion. I'm a little bit nervous about it, but obviously on form, the Stormers are crunching them. But yeah, I don't know if I'm going to make a pick for this. I'll send it to you. You can make a pick.
Yeah, I've got the Stormers, but I mean, you're right. The history of this game, especially in Cape Town, is that it comes to the last seconds. Ulster, you know, 2 years ago when they were in Cape Town for both the round fixture and for the semi-final, took Stormers to the absolute edge. I mean, they're a Moni Lebok touchline conversion away from making the final 2 years ago. But yeah, Ulster just, they have some weaknesses in the tight five. I don't think, you know, they've got all the strength in the world over there. Their best players just aren't really playing too well. Their backline looks pretty sharp when they do get like go forward ball, but they're not able to generate that go forward ball. I think it'll have to be a big game from Nick Timoney and Ian Henderson and those type of players to really, obviously the Stormers are, you know, a big physical team and a good defensive team before they obviously unleash themselves in the counterattack. So it'll be interesting to see how Ulster goes. Yeah, I think you are right to feel a bit uncomfortable, but I would say Stormers win. Then, Sean, any quick shout-outs you want to make for the rugby this week or anything that happened over the weekend?
I'm going to shout-out to Wandi Simelane. I see him starting again this week, and I'm looking forward to him building on what he did. We've all wanted, like, we were all very quick. Everyone was quick to blame Jack White for not giving the opportunity, and for whatever reasons that happened, we saw what he had with the SA under-20s and the Lions. But yeah, I think he's got a lot more to offer. And as you mentioned, the Stormers, Cape Town's the place to go if you want to rejuvenate your career. And he seemed to get it off to a good start. So hopefully he builds on that. So I'm going to be, that's my shout out to give Wendy a massive shout out to for this week.
Must be Shimmy Beach Club. I'll shout out Saracens. Saracens absolutely dominated Harlequins in their the big game in Tottenham Stadium. So it was actually on a very odd channel on Super Sports, like the 240 something. So I was like, okay, I mean, this is a pretty big game, and we usually get all the Premiership games as well. So I was like, okay, this is a bit weird. But then, big occasion. It's probably Owen Farrell's last game. Well, again, unless they make it to the final of the Champions Cup, but their last sort of big derby against Harlequins. And from minute one, they absolutely steamrolled over Harlequins. Like, just the massive ball carrying from the likes of, you know, Gonzalez and Ben Earl, just making meters. The backline just looks so in sync with each other. Van Sales, good and snappy. Owen Farrell is playing, he's playing so relaxed. Like, you can just see, like, the time off, the lack of England pressure. Like, this man, and now that he sorted out his future, he looks so relaxed. Elliot Daly looked like he went into a time machine and just came out like 10 years younger. He was just making absolute meters. Like, Harlequins had no answer for the whole game. And Saracens, I think, got their bonus point try within like 30 minutes. It was just a really horrible day at the office for Harlequins. But Saracens looked like a team that can make a bit of a shout there for the Champions Cup. They playing Bordeaux. I mean, Bordeaux absolutely pasted them a few weeks back. I wouldn't rule out Saracens making that game quite spicy. And that side of the draw that Saracens are in, decent quarterfinal probably against an English team, and then semifinal against Toulouse. You know, there's a route to come back to Tottenham Stadium if they want to.
Yeah, they do have it. And obviously with Farrell leaving, he's going to want the best possible send-off ever. But they have to do it the hard way if they're going to go on to win it, you know? So it's a big one. They've been a bit wobbly, but this was a statement performance. And it's something that them as a squad and the management and everyone, they've been together so long, this is the kind of thing that they'll build on, which will make it scary for everyone else.
Yeah, look, even the Premiership, they're third at the moment. Like, there's a bit of a log jam in the top six or seven teams. They're all quite close to each other. But yeah, they will obviously want to make a run and be able to host a semi-final. And we'll see. Hopefully, I mean, Northampton's been great, but yeah, it'll be really good to see, obviously, if it's a Northampton versus Saracens or even Bath will try to get in the mix as well. That'll be really good matches. But yeah, Saracens were great. Owen Farrell is going to have a very big end of the season. So big shout out to them. Sean, I think let's end it there. Really good chat about the URC, the South African teams, their state. We had a great first phase. And yeah, just going back to or reviewing the week of rugby that we had. Big URC weekend happening this weekend. It's pre-Champions Cup, so the Champions Cup fever will start taking over as well. A lot of good rugby to look forward to in the next 2 months. So yeah, thank you to all our Dirt Trackers. Please follow us on all of our social media platforms. Like, share, rate this podcast. Give it a 5-star rating. Make sure that this podcast goes up in the podcast rankings and make sure that it's shared with everyone in the rugby world. And we will see you in our next podcast next week. Thank you.
Bye.